story of Frank Colacurcio extended well into the 21st century. He was at the center of the Strippergate scandal back in 2003. City council members who had accepted financial contributions from him voted to allow expansion of the parking lot on one of his strip clubs, Rick's, on Lake City Way.
Rick Anderson's book has been adapted for the stage by Mark Ciano and Opal Peachy. Our colleague, Marcy Silman, spoke to Mark Ciano about the new show and the book that inspired it.
I had heard rumors of a book called Seattle Vice, and then my boss, Kurt Beattie, who's the artistic director at ACT Theater, he dropped it off on my desk and said, "This book is hilarious." And not only that, but it's a great historical look at how Seattle used to be, the seedier side of Seattle. And he said, "You know what? I think this would make a great cabaret, and I think you might really have fun adapting this."
Opal, did you know the book?
You know what? When Strippergate was happening around the time that Frank died, so I, you know, would read the PI religiously, a lot of the stuff on Strippergate rang true. And so when the book came out, like Mark, I'd heard of it. I'd seen it at Barnes & Noble's. And then when Mark said, "Oh, you know, Kurt wants me to adapt this," and I said, "The artistic director of ACT Theater, you better follow through on that one, buddy, because it's a great story."
Now, when I think of seamy cities, Seattle does not come to the top of my mind for seaminess. So what kind of sleaze is Rick laying out in this book beyond Strippergate?
We focused our entire show on a certain year in history. One of the tough things about Seattle Vice, the book, is that it spans 70, 80 years worth
of— We have that much sleaze?
Vice and crime. Oh, it goes back.
Yeah, I would say that it's actually a smear campaign that we don't have a sleazy history because we really, really do. As Kurt said, when we were talking to him about the show, he came to Seattle in 1966, and it was a port town, and it was rough. It was a little bit different than the zipped up Microsoft, Amazon Seattle that we have nowadays. And that's Frank's world. And so we want to take our Seattleites under the surface of their own city and tell them the stories that they should know but aren't being taught in public schools.
So what everything you always wanted to know about Seattle but your history teacher never taught you.
Yeah.
What year?
So we focused in on 1965. We thought that was a moment of supreme vice, if you would. In 1964, our last Republican mayor, Mayor Dorm Bramman, declared a tolerance policy, or he revived a tolerance policy, meaning that all vice activities, prostitution, narcotics, gambling, stripping, etc., would be the lowest priority, and that they would be tolerated by the police as long as they were regulated and licensed. And it sounds like, oh, okay, maybe it's a liberalization. It was really just a payback scheme. So the police would provide protection, and you would have to give them a bag of money. And they would walk away with the bag of money and pretend they didn't see what illegal activities you were just doing.
Opal, who are the main characters in your Seattle Vice?
In my Seattle Vice, the main character is obviously Madam Rose Washington.
Who was?
In his world, it's Gil Conti.
Yeah, Gil Conti was a lounge singer, and Madam Rose Washington was a very famous madam who had quite a history in Seattle.
Our story follows three main characters. There's Rose Washington, who was Rosemary Williams, and during the 1960s, I found her fascinating because there's a chapter about her in Seattle Vice. She was Miss Washington in a Miss America pageant in 1958, and she then turned around and became one of the most successful madams in Seattle history during the 1960s. So there's nothing that says that she and Frank Colacurcio knew each other, but they were definitely on trial around the same time and operating their businesses in Seattle in the 1960s.
So how does Gil fit in?
So Gil Conti was a popular lounge singer at the time, and he was playing nightclubs around Seattle, and he started a friendship, basically a partnership, with Frank Colacurcio. And he went from being a lounge singer who was relatively popular, and his style diminished. You know, lounge singing and old cabaret crooning wasn't as popular as you got into the 70s. But his friendship with Frank Colacurcio stayed intact, and he started becoming Frank's money man, his guy who would drive him around from place to place, his chauffeur, if you would. And he would also pack up the car with a ton of money, and they would drive it out to a house in Lake City and just throw bags of money into this house in Lake City.
Is this true?
This is, oh, yeah. This is from Rick Anderson.
Well,
yeah,
Rick Anderson says it is.
He is a reporter for the Seattle Weekly and the Times.
But, so are you saying that you really didn't have to elaborate because this really was a case where truth was more dramatic than anything you could make up?
Definitely.
Oh, yes. In our play, I think the scenes that seem the most ridiculous are the ones that are based in truth. For example, we have a few gangsters from Tacoma, the Carbones, who come in and they try and shake up Frank's club a little bit. And a lot of stuff from that, Frank's relationship with Tacoma and the gangsters there, is pretty funny stuff. But the stuff that is fictionalized is the idea that they did have a relationship together and own the same club. The truer stuff definitely makes for a great story.
When you say musical theater, this isn't going to be the style that people would think of with, you know, My Fair Lady.
Cabaret musical means that you don't suddenly fall in love and start singing.
No?
It means that you're in a club, you fire up the band, you sing a couple songs, you know, you have people dance, you do some show numbers, but it's part of the world that you're in. It's not that I'm so excited I have to start singing. So it's a different style. And we thought it worked perfectly because Frank's clubs in the 60s, like the Magic Inn and the Firelight Room, were cabaret clubs with go-go dancers.
How much of that still exists in Seattle? Have we spiffed up totally?
Well, there's a resurgence is what's happening. Not in the dirtier side, mind you, but, you know, burlesque dancing became go-go dancing and then became the clubs that we associate with Rick's and like the Deja Vu's and the strip clubs of today. But now we're seeing a resurgence of that burlesque style and that form, and a little bit of vaudeville's coming back. And the speakeasy style is really popular. People like going someplace a little hidden, a little out of the way. And that's what we're reviving to a certain degree. We're definitely not taking giant bags of money and giving them to the city council. But there's definitely a resurgence in that old-fashioned, you know, underground cabaret style.
So one really juicy tidbit about Seattle's past seamy side that you think listeners should know about.
What I think is really exciting about this Seattle history is how much of it mirrors what's going on today. One of the best stories, I think, in the book is where he comes out and he almost beats a man to death with a piece of pipe who broke a window in his bar. And the police walk up and they look at him and they're like, "Is this guy bothering you, Frank?" And they put him in handcuffs and they walk the guy away. Frank, who had just nearly beat him to death with a piece of pipe.
Opal Peachy and Mark Ciano, thank you so much for coming by.
Thanks for having us.
They're the co-creators of Seattle Vice. It's a cabaret-style show based on the book by journalist Rick Anderson. They spoke with Marcy Silman. Seattle Vice opens tomorrow at ACT Theater, part of ACT's Central Heating Lab.
And if you'd like to hear more of those stories of the seamy side, you can hear our entire 2010 interview with Rick Anderson about his book, Seattle Vice. Just go to KUOW.org and search for, quote, Seattle Vice, end quote. This is The Record on KUOW.